everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Frogs of War podcast. We are here. It is August 23rd. It is Thursday, a day late, and probably a dollar short for all of you listeners out there today because Melissa and I had just ridiculous Wednesdays that we don't need to get into. But this is the Frogs of War.
I thought we had discussed making that we were waiting for the announcement from the Newton kids. I thought that's what we discussed is our reason.
Made Wednesday so stressful was waiting for them for 24
It wasn't the first day
before.
Of school for me. It wasn't, you know, moving
it
offices for you.
Impromptu bring your seven-month-old to work day. Yeah.
No, none of those things.
None of those things. But yes, we are here. We are the Frogs of War podcast. I am Jamie Plunkett.
I am Melissa Treebwasser.
And we are going to talk a lot of TCU right now. Starting with exactly what Melissa just mentioned, TCU got two commits today, both from the same school, Newton High School in Newton, Texas. There was already a commit from that high school on the commit list for 2019 for TCU. His name is Josh Foster, and he is now joined by two teammates, Tamazia Brown, a four-star wide receiver, and Darwin Barlow. Darwin Barlow, yep. Running back, Darwin number 3 Barlow. Running back in the state of Texas, number 28 running back in the country overall, according to 247sports.com's composite rankings. Two massive, massive pickups for the Horned Frogs. Melissa, you tweeted out an all-caps tweet once these guys committed on Thursday afternoon. What makes you so excited about these two guys coming into the fold?
Well, you know, first of all, I just think it speaks volumes about the culture that TCU is building and the coaching staff and the way that they've recruited. The Horned Frogs signed 3 guys from the same school that are all top 50, top 60 players in the state. You know, it's not like they went and picked up some scrubs that all happened to play together to be walk-ons. I mean, these are legit, heavily recruited talents that have about 60 offers between the 3 of them that everybody wanted a piece of in the state. And now they're all signing on together to continue to bring that chemistry and just that friendship and that bond that they have, and they're taking it to the next level. So Tamazia Brown is a special, special athlete. I think 247 had him ranked as the top 10 athlete in the state. He had, like you said, signed on to play wide receiver for the Frogs, but he's just one of those unique talents that can do a lot of things. Barlow joins another really highly rated recruit at TCU that I know you want to talk about. I'm going to have to figure out how to say this. Demariquai. Okay. I kind of like Demariquai, but I'm old. So now TCU has the number 1 and the number 3 running back from the state of Texas in their class, which is cannot be overstated the importance of that when you look at both Shewo and Darius Anderson as being juniors this year and potentially, you know, Darius has a good season and could be gone. And so having a couple of guys in the fold ready to take their spots as that thunder and lightning punch is a huge, huge deal. So this group, this Carter Boys 19 group seems to be a super tight knit. They're talking to each other on social media. They've got a great quarterback leader in Max Duggan, and now the talent at the top is just growing exponentially by the day, it seems.
Absolutely. You know, the Frogs have 18 commits now for 2019. You already named a couple of them. They also have some really big offensive line prospects on this commit list, too, with Andrew Coker. You know, they've got some other big guys, too. And so it looks like TCU, and we had this debate last week on the show as well, Melissa, about what is keeping TCU from being that perennial top 10 powerhouse. And my argument was that it was recruiting. You know, they're showing right now that they're recruiting at an elite level, especially in the state of Texas. And as long as you're a Texas school recruiting at an elite level in the state of Texas, you're going to be fine unless you're Texas or Texas A&M. But, you know, we'll get to them later in this episode.
Thank God we're not them.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it's so crucial, too, as you look at Jimbo Fisher arriving at A&M and you look at Tom Herman starting to maybe get some momentum at Texas, who's back, then for the Frogs to really lock up a massive, highly rated, talent-heavy 2019 group is so, so crucial for TCU because they need to establish that they're a legit threat and that they are someone who can draw top talent before those programs really start to take off potentially or continue to be dumpster fires that they are. Who knows? But you would imagine that there's some positive momentum coming in College Station and in Austin over the next couple of years. And so for Gary Patterson and Modkins and Big Z and Pauly G and all those awesome, awesome recruiter Looper, all those guys that are doing such a great bang up job recruiting. For them to establish TCU, not and Sonny Cumbie, yeah. I mean, there's TCU's so loaded at recruiting right now. It's insane. But for all of those guys to really be making inroads, not just with, you know, the players that Gary Patterson has always identified as being good fits for his program, but now top players that come in ready made to participate and to be a part of the rotation. I mean, it's cannot overstate how important that is to be happening right now.
Absolutely. It's taking advantage of the situation that you're in, taking advantage of the success that you've had while the, you know, kind of legacy teams in the state have been down for such a significant amount of time. And, you know, it's really the timing of it all has been perfect from a TCU standpoint to see Texas struggle like this, to see Texas A&M bolt for the SEC and even open the door for the Frogs to get into the Big 12. And just to the natural recruiting boost that comes with being in a Power 5 conference. You know, I'm sure I don't follow recruiting at Utah, but I'm sure that the Utes have seen a similar boost on the West Coast since they joined the Pac-12. It's just kind of a natural thing is once you join the ranks of the Power 5, you're going to start getting more guys to look at you. And TCU has capitalized on that by being the best team in the state of Texas for the last, you know, 7-8 years.
Well, and it's not just being the best team in the state, which they clearly have been. It's having the most stability in your coaching ranks. And
True. We've
seen kids talk a lot about the family atmosphere in Fort Worth and how big of a decisive factor. But also, you know, these kids get around, they look and they see Gary Patterson's been there for 18 years. Darnell Fitch played there. Modkins played there. Glasgow. I mean, there's so many of these guys. Dan Sharp has been there for like 30 years. I mean, so many of these guys have been there and or are there for the long haul that these kids trust that they're going to look out for their best interest and that they're going to be there for the entirety of their tenure. And that's not something that you've seen at the rest of the programs in the state right now and that you don't see very often in the country.
It's definitely not. I mean, Patterson's, the second longest tenured head coach in college football behind Kirk Ferentz at Iowa?
By a year. Yeah, and Kirk's only got him by a year, so and Kirk gets fired about every 3 years by the fans. So
he does. Yeah, his buyout is like $11 million, so he's never.
Oh my God, it's insane. And you know, I think too, one of the things that came out earlier this week, Dennis Dodd at CBS did a really great Coaches Confidential, and went in and talked to a bunch of coaches about, you know, who was overrated, who was underrated, and that list was hilarious because it was the same guys on both. But one of the things that they interviewed coaches about too was who's running clean programs, you know, who's got the respect among the coaches, and Gary Patterson was on that list. And so, you know, we're not going to sit here and say that, you know, every program is perfect or clean and that TCU never does anything wrong, of course. But it's pretty nice to know that these kids are coming in, they're being treated the right way, that, they're not being lied to, that they're being, you know, shown integrity by the coaching staff. And I think because of a topic we'll get into later, that is, worth stating as well.
Oh, for sure. You know, from top to bottom, the program seems to be run like it's supposed to be run, clean, with respect to the kids, caring for their holistic selves, not just what their abilities are on the field. You know, and it's stable, like you said. Everything is good right now for TCU football.
It is a good time to be a Horned Frog.
It is a good time to be a Horned Frog. Another reason that it's a good time to be a Horned Frog, well, before we get into this, TCU is the third best recruiting class in the Big 12 right now, according to the 24/7 composite rankings, right behind Oklahoma and Texas, because just get used to it. Like, Texas is always going to recruit at a high level, regardless of what their on-field product actually is. It's just the brand, right? And OU is OU. They're always going to get their guys. But TCU is third, and they've been consistently a top 3-4 recruiting class over these last few years. And we've seen what that has done for them as far as on-field results go. You know, you've got coaches that are used to turning low 3 stars and 2 stars into 10 and 11 win teams. And now they're getting high 3 stars and 4 stars, and they're turning them into 10 and 11 win teams. So things are going great on the recruiting front right now for TCU. Tamazia Brown and Darwin Barlow. both just
Dylan Barlow. I hear he's really good, too.
He is elite. Just wait until his commitment. It's fine. Moving right along, though, some injury news that came up earlier in the week. You covered it in a post on frogswar.com, and there was some more news that came out earlier this week, maybe yesterday or this morning or something like that. The fact that Jalen Reagor is no longer in a walking boot. He posted on Instagram that he was in a walking boot last week, got everyone in a tizzy because it happened right after the Ross Blacklock injury. But he is fine. He has been practicing the last few days, so there's really nothing to worry about on that front as far as injuries for Reagor right now, which is really good to hear, considering you know, some of the other guys that have been banged up on this team. And Melissa, your post went into it, and your list was like 11 or 12 guys long. This is just like a normal camp thing, though. People get beat up.
Yeah, I mean,
August.
It seemed. Sure. Yeah. I mean, Patterson didn't seem too concerned about any of these injuries lingering or being long term, but he definitely seemed concerned about the fact that he's not getting his best players on the field. And not only does that take reps away from those guys who, you know, as he put it, even LaDainian Tomlinson wasn't good enough to not practice. And so those guys are missing reps, but then it also kind of hurts your defense. It hurts the offensive chemistry, hurts your offensive line. You know, when you don't have Darius Anderson or Shewu, or even Amari DeMarcado coming out of the backfield and you're running three walk-ons in your scrimmage, that offensive line isn't learning how your running backs like to, you know, like to hit the cut and like to hit the hole. And, when you don't have all your wide receivers, you're not developing that chemistry with Sean Robinson. When your offensive line, I mean, you know, Casey McDermott-Vai should be back by now, but when he hasn't played and he's expected to be your starter, that's a huge loss for the offensive line. And so, like I said, Patterson wasn't, you know, worried that they weren't going to have his guys, you know, by the time that week two rolls around at SMU, but he definitely seemed concerned that A, the players weren't playing and weren't getting snaps, but also, you know, he mentioned a lot about guys needing to learn how to come back from injury. And so I don't know if that speaks to toughness or just trying to get over the mental hurdles that come with getting banged up. But he definitely, I don't think was happy with kind of the intensity of his guys, but then also, you know, mentioned that they're tired and with the way the practices are now that they haven't gotten the rest that they want. So it's a balancing act for any coach at any program, you know, trying to keep guys healthy at this point in the season, but then also making sure that they're ready to play come week one. And he seems to have done a pretty good job of that over the years. So I think we'll be okay. I don't think we'll see a lot of the starters in the Southern game. Hopefully we won't need to, but by the time SMU rolls around, hopefully we're close to 100% minus the two guys that, you know, are out for the year. One other kind of interesting note, and I think it kind of segues from what you're talking about with recruiting, is one thing Patterson mentioned and that I put in the post as well, was that the younger guys, because they're so much bigger and so much stronger, are not the ones getting hurt. It's the older guys, you know, it's those 4-year recruits and those 5-year ago recruits and the guys that, you know, were 2 stars or low 3 stars. Now these guys come in and they're ready made from day one to participate and contribute. And so, it's been really interesting. I did the post on the safeties. I think today that went up talking about just how much bigger the safeties and the corners are. And so they're not the ones that are banged up. They're the ones out there getting reps. And it's exciting to think about the young secondary and what those guys can do based on the talent that they have.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the young guys, contribute, especially early on when they're going to get some reps because older guys are banged up or because, you know, it's Southern. And the reality is that the expectation is TCU will pull away in the second half against SMU, so they'll get some reps there as well. But then, you know, realistically, the best guys need to be playing by week three because you've got Ohio State.
Yeah.
You've got Texas back-to-back weeks. You've got Iowa State after that, which, as we saw last year, you can't look past Iowa State to a big game. So,
nope.
You know, realistically, whoever's going to be on the field needs to grow up pretty quickly because otherwise this team could find themselves in a bad way early on in the season, you know?
Yeah. Like Gary Patterson said, they could be 0-5 if they don't get their guys healthy and we can all go about our business. So I think it was a little tongue in cheek, but you never know with GP.
You don't. And, you know, but also something that GP doesn't really like a whole lot is the fact that, you know, people are consistently asking him about all of these injuries. You know, he's never been one to divulge much as far as injuries go, and he's never been one to talk about the most, you know, and that's in line with most head coaches realistically, but ultimately what he wants is just to be left alone. I think when it comes to having to report on injury news for his guys, he just wants to be able to get guys out there and get them ready and have everyone kind of trust that he is going to get his team ready to rock at some point. And so let's see here. Oh, Melissa, are you still there? I hear you. Oh, Turn that off.
Up, see. There you are.
Okay, cool. So anyways, I was just talking about how Patterson hates revealing injury information.
Oh, yes. Yeah, his little spiel at his presser last Saturday was hilarious, talking about headlines and how he hated everyone's headlines, and that his favorite thing was how when Atanza Vonger got hurt, that everybody was acting like their season was over, but he was like, he was a fifth string safety. I just moved the sixth string guy into his spot. So right. I thought that was pretty funny.
That is funny. And, you know, realistically, like a four-star kid is a four-star kid. And so everybody's been talking about him for an entire season, but he's a true freshman. Yeah. Like realistically, yeah. I mean, Ross Blacklock didn't even play as a true freshman. So,
yep.
You know, it's pretty limited how many guys are going to get reps in their first year on campus. But, you know, and for those of you, if like my audio cut out at any point or if Melissa's audio cut out at any point, we did have a little technical glitch there, but I don't know that it really affected anyone. We'll see when the final product comes out on Friday morning. But moving right along, because it's already a little bit late and we've got early warnings, TCU, the AP poll came out earlier this week, Melissa, and TCU is ranked 16th, the exact same spot they were ranked in the coaches poll a couple weeks ago when that poll came out. How do you feel about TCU being kind of in the middle of the top 25 at this point in time?
Well, first of all, let me get this out of the way, is that preseason rankings are dumb and they should not release any rankings until the first college football playoff rankings come out. Let everybody start on a clean slate. I thought Parker did a great job of addressing that in his post on Thursday and what those mean, but rankings are dumb and shouldn't happen. So that being said, I think it's a real testament to what TCU has built. When you look at everything that they've lost and all the pieces that they're replacing, to be ranked 16th to start the season with a new offensive line, a new quarterback, you know, running back coming off of injury, a basically brand new wide receiver core, have lost your defensive tackle for the season, and to still be a top 20 team is a real testament to the faith that people have in Gary Patterson. And so I would have been much happier to be lower. I would have been much happier to be, you know, like 24th or something like that. But I think it's a fair spot. I think the Frogs have a lot to live up to, and that opening schedule does them no favors. And so I don't care what we're ranked. I want to see how we look against SMU and if we can come out and look strong. And I want to see what we do against Ohio State. And I want to go down to Austin and beat Texas. And then I'll start to really look at this as a top 15, top 20 program. But for now, I think it just shows that the Frogs have a lot more respect than they did even, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And that's a testament to what Gary Patterson has built.
I think so. TCU, even if it's not happening in state as much, at least that's what it feels like to me, is that it's happening on a national level more so than it's happening on an in-state level, simply because of the arrogance or the ignorance, either take your pick, of Texas and Texas A&M fans and Texas Tech fans and name your fans that are in the state that aren't TCU fans, who all just still view TCU as that small school in Fort Worth that doesn't really do much. But, you know, I appreciate you mentioning Parker's article, because I do think it's interesting, and I agree with you. I think that we need to get rid of preseason rankings and preseason polls and all of that kind of stuff, because realistically, all that does is it sets up an imbalance right out of the gate for how we're viewing all of these programs. You know, I mean, in 2015, when TCU was preseason number one in a poll or preseason number two in a couple of different polls, yeah. And then they came out and they lost a couple of games and they still went, 11-2 that year?
Yeah.
And everybody nationally called it a disappointing season because TCU was ranked number two and they finished the season like ninth or something like that. And they fell from their preseason rankings. And that's just absolutely ridiculous. You know, 11-2 is a phenomenal season regardless of who the program is or what the expectations are.
Well, and that was the year that everybody got hurt.
Yes.
Literally, yes. Everybody was hurt.
Uh-huh. Doxson wasn't playing anymore. Listenby wasn't playing. Boykin missed the Oklahoma game that year, you know, and yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, that was just a tragic year as far as injuries. Derek Kindred played the entire season with a broken collarbone, which was just ridiculous that year.
James McFarland stepped on a sprinkler head and never was the same again.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't trust these practice fields out of TCU.
Well, that's why they got them redone.
Yeah.
Both the injuries happened indoors. Patterson made sure to point that out in the 70-degree weather.
Well, they got to get new turf then.
But, you know, but what, but essentially what I'm saying is, like, you know, if they get rid of rankings until the first college football playoff rankings come out, then, you know, theoretically, a G5 team like Central Florida might actually have a shot of making the college football playoff. But because Central Florida started the year unranked, and then they had to fight their way up the rankings, because then at that point you're arguing, oh, okay, well, this team was already ranked ahead of them, and this team also won this week, so do they really deserve to be dropped below Central Florida? Okay, let's look at opponent. Okay, let's look at margin of victory. Let's look at all this other information, when in reality, a 9-0 Central Florida team should probably be ranked ahead of most 8-1 Power 5 teams, other than maybe, say, Bama and Clemson and teams that are just perennially top two, top three teams in the country. Yeah. So I'd be down for getting rid of postseason rankings, honestly. I'd be down for that. But screw postseason rankings, because you know what's happening about a week from today?
I believe football is happening.
Real college football. Actually, real college football is starting in 2 days. College football is starting on Saturday, August 28th. But for TCU, it is starting in 8 days. We play Southern.
I'm so glad.
Quote, real, end quote, opponent with players that TCU doesn't know, players that will get hit by TCU, players that will hit back with full force, quarterbacks will be allowed to be tackled. It will be a beautiful thing at 11 a.m. at Amon G. Carter Stadium. And you know what's great about that, Melissa, and the days leading up to that? Is that we know who our starting quarterback is going to be. You were right.
And of course
I made it more of a competition in my head than most other people probably did. Sean Robinson is the starting quarterback for the Horned Frogs.
Well, in your defense, Jamie, it's another year, another manufactured TCU quarterback controversy. How you know it's almost time for the season is Gary Patterson is convincing us that it was a lot closer than we thought it was. You know, it's exciting. I'm excited for Sean Robinson, by all accounts, just a really, really great kid. Obviously has the talent, has the arm strength, can make throws that Kenny Hill could not make, has, you know, is a little bit faster, is a lot bigger, isn't Trayvon Boykin when it comes to fancy footwork, but is, you know, a kind of a version of that with another, you know, 35 pounds added to him. There's a lot of question marks. You know, I think that most fans are overwhelmingly in favor of Sean starting, but there are a couple. We get a lot of Facebook comments, predominantly from the same person, that doesn't seem to trust him based off of one game that was played in 40-mile-hour winds and 30-degree weather. But I think that it's the right thing to do is give him an opportunity, let him show out. We're going to see Michael Collins against Southern. Patterson made it pretty clear that he's going to play both guys. We could even see some Grayson Muehlstein, which would make me the happiest person in the entire world. But it's Sean's show, and it should be. You know, he's the highly touted kid. He's got the skill set. Now he's got to go out and show he can win games.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in the back of my head, I knew it was always going to be Robinson. I just let myself get caught up in the unknown and in the mystery of the competition. And I agree. I think Sean Robinson is the right pick, because you've got a guy who proved himself at the highest level of Texas high school football. You've got a guy who stepped in honorably in a strange game situation in Texas Tech and led his team to a win. And I don't think many people give Sean Robinson credit for this, but I'm fairly certain he got dinged up pretty significantly early on in that game. And people talk about that when they're talking about him going 6-for-17 throwing the ball. He got the crap knocked out of his ribs early on in, I think, the second quarter. He was tackled out of bounds or something like that. He came down hard on his ribs, where he took a hit in the chest or something like that. And from then on, like, I don't know if anybody's ever tried to throw a football with a bruised rib before, but it doesn't feel good to try and move your arm like that when you've got a bruise up in your chest space and you can't breathe like you normally can breathe and you're running around and being chased and stuff. And so, you know, I think there are some factors in that, in the midst of that game, that go overlooked. that make it really easy to write that performance off and say, oh, well, someone else than Sean Robinson should play because in this limited opportunity, he was not great. He also ran for 84 yards in that game. And, you know, his mobility is incredible and should not be overlooked as well. So I totally agree. He needs to be the starter. Yes, Michael Collins will play in the Southern game, but realistically, this is Sean's team until he proves that it shouldn't be. And you're not going to get that in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, well, and you know, and like you were saying about Sean Robinson, I was at that game. I was sitting right behind the TCU bench, and every time he came off the field, they were wrapping him up. They were switching out his pads. When he left the game after the win, like he went to go give a family member a hug or a high five, and they leaned over and he was like, "I can't reach my arm up to give you that high five." Like he couldn't do it. So he was obviously hurt, and you're right, that's been glossed over. I think, you know, Patterson has pointed out time and time again how important it is to have two guys. And I do think that the coaching staff feels that if something, you know, if Robinson were to get hurt as a running quarterback or something were to happen, that they've got a guy that can come in and lead them to wins. And so that's the most important thing is you've got a great starter. You've got a guy that is the guy, but you have somebody behind him too, that can step in and win ball games if it's necessary and is not going to be afraid of the big moment. So it's a real luxury for the Frogs. They still have Justin Rogers, who seems to be inching closer and closer to being ready to go full contact. And of course, Grayson Muehlstein. And so that quarterback room is deep and it's talented. They seem to really like each other. They all get along. There's a real kinship there. Kenny Hill, I think, has helped a lot with the chemistry too. It's a healthy competition, but at the end of the day, they all want TCU to win games. And that seems to be the primary factor and focus. So it's a good situation to be in for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, realistically, whoever's back there, this is probably the most talented quarterback core that TCU has ever had.
Oh, for sure.
As far as just legitimate arm talent and mobility and football IQ, like they've got it all. And so whoever's back there, you know, I'd be more concerned about injuries to the running backs and the offensive line not gelling and, you know, the defense kind of faltering again this year like they did, I think, in 2016, than I would be quarterback play being kind of the key reason for a lack of success in 2018 for TCU football. Because realistically, if you need to, you can revert back to the offense that TCU ran with Kenny Hill, which was get the ball out quick or run, you know, and all of these guys have that ability to make those quick decisions and to get the ball moving forward with their legs. And, you know, I think there's more pressure on the offensive line than there is on the quarterback, as far as offensive success in 2018.
I completely agree.
That's just my opinion. Speaking of offensive line, though, you had a really interesting post on Monday of this week talking about how Patterson was elaborating a little bit on how the line was a surprise for him this fall, that they had been coming along rather nicely. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I think there's two schools of thought. When Gary Patterson is happy, generally TCU fans are worried. And when he's angry, it usually means we have a pretty good team. But that's not the vibe that I've gotten, you know, and having a chance to meet with him a couple of times through some media availability and to listen to a couple of interviews. He seems to be legitimately in a good spot with this offensive line. His key going into fall camp was he wanted eight guys. We've heard him say that pretty much every year that he's been in Fort Worth too. And I think, you know, to his credit, to the recruiting credit, to the players' credit, and to Chris Thompson's credit, they seem to have developed that eighth guy. Where things get really, really interesting is at the tackle position with Anthony McKinney and Austin Myers. And it looks like right now Myers is beating out the very highly regarded transfer, the JUCO transfer, Anthony McKinney, who is a man mountain. But, you know, Myers is also no small man himself. So if you've got that much competition between two guys that seem to be playing really, really well, then that can only serve to improve, your team as a whole and gives you a little bit of depth and flexibility because most of the guards can play, you know, left or right side and the tackles can play left or right side too. So it gives you some security. Offensive line injuries have been an issue for TCU, in a very extreme form the last couple of years. So, having some flexibility, having some depth in that area could be a huge difference maker. He had some concerns, you know, he wouldn't say which, guard position. By process of elimination, you kind of assume it's that battle for that guard spot opposite Lucas Niang. Niang's tackle, right? It's that other guard Cordell. Spot opposite. Yes, thank you, Cordell. And so there's been a battle there. It looks like Wes Harris might have the edge right now. You know, another young player, redshirt freshman coming in, big body, played at Aledo. So another, you know, high level Texas high school football. Seems like he's probably going to be the guy, but it looks like Patterson's not quite ready to say that that position is locked in, and there still needs to be some development and work done. But the line is huge. These are massive human beings. Chris Thompson seems to be doing an exceptional job developing. And the one thing that Patterson has talked about is that it's been less about teaching the big concepts for them, that those guys seem to get it. And so they're really able to focus in on the details and the technique and as he put it, how they fit and how they sit. So that's, if you're getting into the detail and the refining work, then that's a good sign for that group as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not too worried about one position battle along the line, or even two, if, you know, Patterson's happy with both of those guys performing. It's much more concerning when he's that kind of positive where you think he's trying to boost the confidence mm-hmm. level of a player through his comments to the media, which we've absolutely seen in years past. You're right. And, you know, a guy who I've been incredibly impressed with this offseason and early this fall, just through what I've read and what I've heard, is Kelton Hollins has stepped up incredibly well as the new starting center for this offensive line. And as we know, based on last year, center can either make or break an offensive line. And so if he is clicking and if he is getting what he needs to do done, then I am fully confident in this offensive line's ability, especially to, you know, figure things out on the fly these first two games before you get to Cowboy Stadium, get to Ohio State.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. I think we're going to be in good shape. Ohio State will be, you know, they're going to be facing the potential number one overall draft pick in Baby Bosa. So like the challenge is certainly there. If they can contain that Ohio State defensive front or offense, yeah, defensive front, we're going to have a reason to have a lot of confidence going forward and to be really, really excited about that group.
You know, I'm hopeful that the NCAA will allow us to have 12 men on offense if Ohio State is going to have 12 men on defense.
That's my big concern.
It is only fair. You know, I mean, yeah, give us Darius and Shabo on the field at the same time every snap. Yes, please.
For sure.
Yes, please. You know, another thing that Frog fans are probably wanting to keep an eye on is who is stepping up and filling in the massive shoes of Ross Blacklock since he went down with injury a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, from all of the things that I've heard, Melissa, is that it's Terrell Cooper. This redshirt freshman has just been practicing incredibly well over the last couple of weeks since Blacklock went down with an Achilles injury. And, you know, and also Greg Ellis, the third, one of those names. I don't have a roster in front of me right now. I don't know if you can tell.
George Ellis. Yeah. No, I never would have known.
It doesn't help that our Slack channel apparently is blowing up right now too. And trying to do all this on my phone at one time. But so George Ellis too. You know, those two guys have apparently stepped up really, really nicely into that defensive tackle spot. And realistically, like, it was a luxury to have Ross Blacklock on the interior of this defensive line when you've got ends like LJ Collier and Ben Banigou. But because they have ends like LJ Collier and Ben Banigou, you just need above average defensive tackle play. I really do believe that. And especially when you've still got Corey Bethley lining up on the inside, if you've got Terrell Cooper and George Ellis and senior like Joe Broadnax coming in and just, you know, kind of rotating into that other DT spot, the depth is there to provide the defensive line with what it needs from a tackle position so that Banigou and Collier and Summers, who slid down to the defensive end again, and all of those guys, I'll give them what they need to be able to make plays off the edge. Because, like I said, Blacklock was a luxury. He was an elite player. But when you've got ends as good as what TCU has, you don't necessarily need elite play from a tackle. Maybe that's just me trying to spin it positive. But, losing Blacklock sucks. But it doesn't mean the end of the world for this defensive line, I don't think.
Sure. Well, and, you know, and Patterson brought up a couple points. number one, that, you know, whereas Ross Blacklock would have been the guy on the field, you know, as long as he could be on the field, he's going to do more rotating now. And so it may be, you know, a two or three plays and rotate a guy in and out. And so you're going to have fresher legs, which is something that Patterson has always really had. We haven't had the luxury of having talent like Ross Blacklock and Corey Bethley, that, you know, two guys like that that don't need to come off the field. And so keeping fresher legs could be a benefit. They've also moved Michael Epley over to the DT spot so that Summers does have that ability to drop into defensive end. And then also he'll still play some linebacker depending on the matchups and the teams. I'd expect to see him play linebacker maybe against Ohio State, but drop to end against teams like Texas and Iowa State that are, you know, a little bit more ground and pound. So it'll be interesting to see how Patterson plays with those chess pieces. He was really upbeat about it. You know, he mentioned that a lot of times losing a star like that can really galvanize your team, and it kind of makes everybody want to take that next step up to pick up for him. And I don't think you could see a guy on that team more well-loved than Ross Blacklock. And so I think that you will see guys on the defensive line put in just a little bit extra to try to pick up for his loss. And you are going to have fresher legs. You've got talent. You're absolutely dead on with Cooper. Patterson has spoken so, so highly of him. And George Ellis has another great motor. And so those guys combined probably aren't Ross Blacklock, but if you're able to rotate them in and out, if you can make up for 75 to 80% of his production, then you're still in really, really good shape. 100% agree with you on that.
And yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, they don't have to be Ross Blacklock because of the rest of the talent that we've got on this defensive line. You know, and that should be a relief, I think, for TCU fans, is to understand that, you know, this team has the depth and the talent and the size to where, you know, in 2012 or in 2013, losing a guy like Ross Blacklock would have been devastating. But realistically, because of the way that TCU has been recruiting and developing talent, it's not as painful from a depth perspective anymore to see a guy like that go down. It still sucks.
Absolutely.
Tremendously. Yeah, it sucks, but your team's not lost because of it. And I like the idea of them all stepping up and wanting to perform well in Ross's stead. That's kind of, you know, that's a great team mentality that I think this coaching staff has done a good job of instilling these guys with. But Melissa, now's the time to talk about the current best athletics program on campus at TCU. And it's not the football team.
It is not.
And it's not the basketball team.
They haven't played a game. It is not the basketball team.
And it is not the baseball team. It is not even equestrian or rifle. It is TCU women's soccer. 3-0 through three games. Absolutely dominating the competition. Wins over Alabama, McNeese State, and as of the recording of this podcast, a dominating win over Stephen F. Austin. 30 shots on goal to 2, I believe was the statistic that we saw earlier tonight.
Yeah.
How great is it that Eric Bell has turned around this soccer program so quickly and so well? They were in the NCAA tournament last year. They made it to the Big 12 championship. They're starting out really hot this year. I just love that TCU's athletics program, you can go down the list and say, yeah, TCU football, obviously incredible. Basketball, up-and-coming NCAA tournament last year. TCU baseball, one of the most dominant programs in the country. Rifle, always in the national title conversation. You've got equestrian, which is always top 10 elite program. Now you've got like soccer and volleyball and all these other teams that are up and coming. Like, you just go down the list of TCU sports and every single team seems to be either at an elite level of play or on their way to an elite level of play. And soccer is just the next on that list.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, they do a great job of building an incredible home environment. It is a fun place to go watch a game. I think I saw the women's basketball team were out there supporting them. The men's basketball team is out there quite a lot. Baseball's been out there. So they've really energized, I think, just the fall athletics feel around campus, gotten the new freshmen involved, and it sets the tone for sure for TCU football. Super annoying that they're so good, though, too, because it means they play a lot of Friday night games, which really upsets the tailgating. But I'm going to go ahead and let that slide, so that we can just enjoy the undefeated TCU athletic season and the start that soccer, the momentum they've built for the Horned Frogs as a whole.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. We're still going to get
it's not just
delicious
about
meats and beer on Saturdays.
It's true.
We're going to. That's just a fact of life. And it's good to have soccer being good in the meantime. That's enough about soccer. That's enough soccer talk though for this podcast, honestly, because that's, I'm going to have to be better because that's really legitimately pretty much all that I know at this point. I'm going to have to do more research.
I'm going to expend
all my knowledge.
My goal this year is to be more into TCU soccer and more into TCU volleyball because Joe Kramer continues to build something really special over at the Rickle as well with that volleyball program.
Who has
a chance to go 4-0 this weekend in a tournament that they're hosting. That I'm not going to give the name that our friend Chris gave it because it's kind of mean, but it has something to do with baked goods and easy wins. So we'll just let you guys figure that one out for yourselves.
Yeah, we're just going to move right along. So let's go to some storylines, though, around the Big 12 in college football. The one that pretty much all of these, I think, on our list tonight impact in some way TCU specifically. The first one probably does as much, if not more so, than any other thing that we're going to talk about in this kind of segment of the show. And that's the fact that Urban Meyer was suspended for 3 football games for this upcoming season based on his role in not deliberately covering up the domestic abuse allegations that were levied against one of his assistant coaches, Zach Smith, who allegedly, again, was abusing his wife. He's been arrested twice for it, once in 2009 and once in 2015. At Big Ten Media Days, Urban Meyer said that he didn't know anything about it. He had heard about the 2015 allegations the night before, which turns out was a total and complete lie. But he wasn't intentionally lying because, you know, Melissa, he's been taking medicines. And as we all know, a general side effect of medicine is memory loss. Forget the fact that he remembers pretty much every single play from the Florida 2008 and 2009 national championships.
Yeah.
He couldn't remember, you know, he couldn't remember. And so let's just cut the guy some slack. But no, he's been suspended for 3 games for his role in all of those issues up in Ohio. But it's not even really a full 3-game suspension. Allowed to coach or prepare the team or do any kind of team activities the week leading up to their first game, which is against Oregon State. But for weeks 2 and 3, which are against Rutgers and TCU, he can't be on the field coaching that weekend. So he's missing Saturdays, but he will be allowed to be with the team all week for both of those games. He will be allowed to be in meetings with his coaching staff. He will be allowed to be on the practice field with his team. He will be allowed to do all of the things that a coach normally does to prepare for an opponent. He just won't be able to actually coach the day of the game. And so realistically, when we get down to it, Urban Meyer, for his role in covering up the domestic abuse accusations that, realistically, we've seen pictures at this point. We've seen a text message of Zach Smith admitting this. We've seen that he's been arrested twice for it. We can say allegedly all we want. He beat his wife. Urban Meyer's role in covering all of that up, he has been suspended for, let's say, the 5 days leading up to the Oregon State game, the Saturday of that game and the Rutgers game and the TCU game, a total of 8 days. He's been suspended for 8 days,
mm-hmm.
essentially. 8 whole days.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that his wife, I don't know how she's coming off so clean in the midst of all of this. If the fact that she didn't say, or if the, you know, one of the things in the report from the investigation, you know, it's always interesting when a school investigates something that happened at its own institution. The fact that Shelley Myers has not been more in trouble, I don't understand. Because if it's true that she did not tell her husband or tell anyone what was happening to Courtney Smith, as an employee of a university, as a mandatory reporter, that's a fireball offense right there. So I don't know what the heck's going on with her. But realistically, what I have learned throughout all of this, or just really had confirmed for me, is that Urban Meyer is a terrible person. I've learned that his wife seems to also be a terrible person as well. And they are just getting the lightest of slaps on the wrist for their role in all of this. It's infuriating. It's so incredibly frustrating. And not even from a TCU perspective, right? Like, who gives a crap about the football game on September 15th? Honestly, in the grand scheme of things, like who gives a damn whether TCU wins that game or Ohio State wins that game, if Urban Meyer's coaching it or if he's not? Like, who cares? Realistically, he won't be coaching on that Saturday. Cool. If Ohio State loses, they'll use that as an excuse for why they lost. Cool. I don't care. The fact of the matter is that Ohio State has explicitly put winning above women, just like Baylor, just like Penn State did with all of those children, just like Michigan State did with Larry Nassar, just like Maryland did with Jordan McNair. Winning comes first at an institution that has athletics at this level, apparently. That's just kind of the rule. And just like we talked about last week, this is a culture issue. And if we can't find a way as a society to overcome these cultural issues, people are still going to die. Women are still going to get beaten and raped. Children are going to be exploited. Like this, these are the facts of a culture that continues to say winning is the most important thing. And it's just so incredibly frustrating to see. And someone on my post about Urban Meyer from Wednesday night said that I was trying to take the moral high ground. I don't think that that's actually the case. I don't think that there's a, this is a moral high ground kind of stance. I think that this is like a moral baseline, realistically. Like this should be kind of the starting point for everyone. Oh my gosh, what's more important? Beating Michigan or protecting a woman who's having the crap knocked out of her?
Not beating women. Right.
Like what's more important? Beating Rutgers or making sure that Courtney Smith doesn't end up dead in front of her children? You know, and so realistically, that's what gets me so worked up. And I know that I ranted about this last week on the podcast, and here I am on a soapbox again. But like I said, I don't think this is a moral high ground that I'm trying to take here. I think that this is a moral baseline that has been lost in the midst of all of these college athletics programs. And that's me. That's my two cents. I meant to stop and like let you cut in, well, but I got on a roll.
No, you were rolling. You know, and I think you said it really well. And I guess the thing that I'll add is I love TCU football, but it's getting really, really hard to love college football. We've seen this time and time again. And I guess in some way I'm disappointed in myself for being surprised that Ohio State and the fans and all of them put winning above doing what's right. I agree. I think Urban Meyer is impossible to defend as a person, as a leader of men, as someone that you're turning your child over to for 4 or 5 years, hoping to raise him. And I'm disgusted by the fact that we are asking more of the 18 to 22 year old boys in this program than we are the people that are leading them. You and I both work with kids. You know, we've both kind of picked careers that, that have us serving and mentoring and leading young people. And like I tweeted the other day that the worst part of all of this is that this is the example that we're setting for those kids. And so how can we be surprised when they get to these college football programs and they make mistakes, when everyone in their life is showing them that if you're good enough, if you're talented enough, if you're wealthy enough, that your mistakes don't go, those are not on your permanent record. How can we be surprised when these cover-ups happen? How can we be surprised when these colleges do everything in their power to hide what's going on behind closed doors? There's just too much money. There's too much ego, and there's too much of a sense of invincibility. And at the end of the day, and the nice thing is you've seen the journalists and you've seen some of the well-known, graduates of Ohio State say that, you know, Ohio State is bigger than one person. And, just because if Urban Meyer's not your coach, you can still love your college. It's the fans should not be protecting him. They should be protecting the reputation of their university. And it's the same thing we saw at Baylor, same thing we saw at Penn State, same thing we saw at Florida. Yeah. You know, the last time that he got in a little bit of trouble and had a medical issue to get out of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I hope to God that we don't ever see anything like this at TCU. But if we do, I hope to God that I'm a better person than what I've seen the majority of college football fans react to these situations over the last decade or so.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a difference, too. I mean, you used the word mistake and all of that. And I think that realistically, you know, like Todd Gurley selling his autograph to make some money when he was at Georgia, or his jersey or whatever the heck it was that he sold, that's a mistake, right? And that's really only a mistake because the NCAA doesn't pay players, because the NCAA is so worried about keeping these kids amateur in the most lean sense of the word, aka not getting paid, he got suspended for 4 games. You know, another kid from Georgia, I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, got suspended for 4 games for doing something similar. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all of the kids at Ohio State who got suspended for 5 games for selling stuff so that they could get tattoos. Now, granted, Jim Tressel got fired for that. Apparently, the standards have changed at Ohio State over the last, 10 years or whatever, however long ago that was. But realistically, like, there's even an imbalance in college football in how we punish the players and how we punish the men in charge. Because, all of those kids did what was wrong only by NCAA standards. Because the NCAA says that they're not allowed to make money. What Zach Smith did was wrong on a moral level. And that goes beyond what the NCAA should be able to govern. Like, that is just a legal issue at that point. That's just a moral issue at that point. And so there's a difference in the way that these people are being punished, because Urban Meyer, if he wants to sell his autograph, no one's going to stop him. And I don't think he should be stopped from doing that.
Sure.
If he wants to sell, like his game worn pullover or whatever to make a couple bucks, autograph it for a fan and give it to someone for $100, whatever. Cool, man. Make $100. Like, that's how I feel about these kids doing, selling autographs and doing all this other stuff too. Like, make some money. I don't care. Right. All of these college basketball players and this shoe scandal or whatever the heck it is, like Dennis Smith Jr., who's a Maverick now, making like $40,000 while he was at NC State. Cool, man. Get some coin. Like, I don't care. I don't care. Don't hit a woman. Don't rape someone. Don't murder or steal or be like a violent offender. Like, just don't do something that you know is morally wrong. Sure, what they did was wrong in the eyes of the NCAA, because the NCAA doesn't want them to get paid. But I think that there's a difference in that kind of mistake or that kind of a choice and the kind of choice that Zach Smith made to be violent towards his wife. I think there's a difference there.
Absolutely.
And it's just, we could talk about this for the next, 3 or 4 hours, or at least I could, and you could sit there quietly and patiently and wonderfully and just be, be the most patient human being that covers TCU because you work with me, but let's move right along to something that's much more lighthearted and fun. Did you know, Melissa, that Texas A&M doesn't want to play Texas because Alabama is really good?
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
What was your tweet about Guy Fieri restaurants?
Why would you? Yeah, that Texas A&M not wanting to play Texas because Alabama is good at football is akin to saying that you're a 5-star chef because you ate at a Guy Fieri restaurant.
Oh, I can proudly say it was pretty good. That I've never eaten at a Guy Fieri restaurant.
I had a home across from one in California for a while. It was great. The garlic sauce is no joke, though. But it's hilarious. It was good. I'm not kidding. It's a good garlic sauce. The Texas, it's so on brand for Aggie to ride the coattails of a program that they haven't sniffed and beaten in years. That they only beat once because Johnny Football was just better than anything else in college football. To jump into the SEC and start claiming titles for the 3 years before they were part of the conference. I mean, it's just so on brand Texas A&M that I am glad to see them staying consistent under their new leadership. That's the important thing to take out of this, is that Jimbo Fisher has them all still drinking the maroon Kool-Aid, which means that they'll also probably still start falling off a cliff in November of the football season, even though their schedule's a little front loaded. So, God forbid, my biggest fear going into this college football season has nothing to do with how TCU is going to do or not do. Not worried about the offensive line. I'm not worried about the injuries. I'm not worried about Ross Blacklock. What I'm worried about is Texas A&M somehow beating Clemson or Alabama, and there not being any room for the rest of us to breathe in the state of Texas when all those egos start inflating even more. That's my fear for this college football season.
Sorry.
It's good. Apparently it was that those egos started inflating already.
They sure did. So much so that my headphones unplugged from my phone and it slammed directly into the ground. That's what that huge crash noise was. Wow. Everything's fine. everything's fine over here. As long as the children didn't wake up, everything is fine. Gosh, first of all, we don't have to worry about that. They're not going to be Clemson or Alabama. Like, you've heard that. You heard it here, not first. You just heard, you heard it here, though. Like, they're not winning those games. That's not even happening. Clemson probably has
glad to hear it.
Seven guys that are going to go to the NFL next year on his defense alone. Like, that defense is so freaking stacked, and they've got Etienne, the, that running back who was a true freshman last year, who's just a boss. Like, they're not beating Clemson. They're not going to beat Alabama because they're the big red machine. Yeah, they're just not. A&M still hasn't named a starting quarterback. It might be Kellen Mond. It might be whoever else is on their team that's not Kellen Mond. They're not winning those games. And realistically, if they were smart, they would look over it to Austin and realize this is probably one of the better chances they've had in recent memory to actually come away with some consistent wins over the Longhorns. Because Texas isn't back yet either, as much as everybody wants to say that they are.
Yeah. Like,
they're both middling programs at this point. So why not take a shot? Why not draw some more attention to your program? Put eyeballs on a game that your team has a legitimate chance to win. I don't know. But then again, I'm not an Aggie. So.
Well, let's give our give some props to our friend Christo Conti, though, because what a smooth move by him. Try to do everything in your power to get the Aggies to play when you know they're going to say no. And to be fair to A&M, they probably don't have room on their schedule in time in the next 3 or 4 years anyways. But yeah, what a smart, that is such a Del Conte move.
Hey, let's play.
I mean, give the man some credit.
Now every Texas fan can look at all of the whining Aggies and say,
he's a friggin' hero.
You had a chance. You didn't take it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Such a hero.
Moving right along, though, that was entertaining, but there is some stability coming to the Big 12 in the form of quarterback decisions, all of that have been made, I think, in the past week, all since Monday, I'm pretty sure. Kyler Murray was officially announced as the starting quarterback at Oklahoma. Sam Ellinger was officially announced as the starting quarterback at Texas. And the biggest of these three, Peyton Bender, tabbed as the starting quarterback at the University of Kansas. Or Kansas University.
Oh, Kansas is back, y'all. Kansas is back.
Bender's leading them to the promised land. That's for sure. But this is nice, right? Like, nobody likes quarterback question marks, especially if you're looking at an opponent and you don't know who their quarterback is going to be. Now, you know, TCU knows. It's going to be Kyler Murray. By the fourth game of the season, Ellinger probably won't have been benched yet. And Kansas doesn't have anyone other than Peyton Bender. So, you know, and it's Kansas. It's Kansas. But it's nice. Like, there's some stability that's starting to, like, there's been so much talked about as far as Will Grier being, like, the only proven quarterback in the Big 12 in 2018. Now we're starting to see those names of guys who are going to kind of push him to actually be the best quarterback in the league this year. You've got Sean Robinson. Now you've got Sam Ellinger and Kyler Murray. And you've got, you know, we'll say Peyton Bender's name again because he doesn't get enough publicity, I guess. But, you know, you're starting to get all of these names now of kids who are going to be the dude for their offense. And I like seeing that starting to kind of all of those pieces starting to fall into place because now we can really start to look at these teams and start to analyze them and break them down from an offensive perspective, kind of look at what the tools each of these guys bring to the table and see what TCU can do defensively to completely shut them down. So I like seeing stuff like this.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. You want to know who you're up against. You want to know what's going on. You want there to be stability in the conference. And you want to see teams start looking like the team they're going to be when you play them. And so knowing who you're going to be facing behind center is a big part of that. It'll be good. And this is an interesting group of quarterbacks. There's plenty of talent. But you know, Will Grier remains the only guy who's really showed out consistently on the big stage. And had he not gotten hurt last year, could have potentially, you know, been a guy invited to New York. So, but there's no shortage of guys that can really sling it. So it should be another fun year for offenses in the Big 12. I am really interested to see what Kyler Murray looks like at Oklahoma. I'm really interested to see, what Sam Ellinger looks like in year two. Don't forget Charlie Brewer down at Baylor, who's another exciting young talent. Whatever Texas Tech can roll out, God only knows who's going to be eligible for them, who's not going to get in trouble. But they've got some guys. Jet Duffy was who Sean Robinson faced off against in the state championship a couple of years ago. So I'm gonna let that one hang there. So speaking of arrests in Texas Tech, your final point of the night. What an interesting story out of Lubbock. And I have just cursorily seen this because it all happened as I was getting ready to get back in the classroom with kids. And so I didn't really get to pay too much attention about it. So maybe you can fill us all in on what happened down there.
So ultimately what took place was that there was a Texas Tech running back who was arrested either over the weekend or earlier in the week. And there were some pretty significant accusations that were slung around. So here's some more on it. So DeLeon Ward, Texas Tech's starting running back, was arrested on charges of theft for somewhere between $2,500 and $30,000. And this, the arrest warrant or whatever said that the arrest stemmed from an incident involving cell phones in the student rec center over at Texas Tech. And so, you know, you get that kind of news that was on Tuesday and you're like, well, Tech is going to be without their starting running back this year, until Wednesday happened and a new report came out that said Ward was wrongfully arrested and their case will no longer be pursued because there was insufficient evidence. And the Lubbock County District Attorney actually came out and said, I'm sorry, the young man got arrested. He never should have been arrested. The case should have never been filed. And so realistically, like, Texas Tech's running back, it seems, did absolutely nothing wrong, or stole $30,000 and just got away with it. But probably the former, and was arrested on Tuesday and then was, told, sorry, that's our bad, on Wednesday afternoon by the Lubbock police. So that's really all that there is to this story at this point, is that this guy was wrongfully arrested and the police, you know, thankfully figured it out.
Things that happen in Lubbock.
I mean, that's exciting for a Lubbock Tuesday, to be real. That's exciting for a Lubbock Saturday night, let's be honest there.
So true.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all we've got around the Big 12 and college football this week. We said earlier on in this show, next week will be a game preview podcast because it will be a game week. TCU will play Southern. We will be live at Dutch's at 7:30 next Wednesday on August 29th. I believe that's right. August 29th, 7:30, Dutch's locker room. Be there. Melissa and I will be recording. We have the audio issues from last time figured out, so that's nice, so that you'll be able to listen to that episode on the podcast the next day if you can't make it out there. But come out, have a burger, have a beer, listen to the Frogs of War podcast. We'll be breaking down everything that you could possibly want to know about Southern as TCU gets ready for their first game Saturday, September 1st at 11 a.m. Melissa, it's football season.
I am so sick of talking about the offseason and so ready to start talking about football games. It is time. And I think that I think the players and the coaches and the media all agree on this. We want to play some football.
Or we want to watch our people hit some other people. I don't want to get hit or hit. I'm not going to get that.
Yes, I also would prefer
we'll
not
watch
to.
It from just close enough. And so, folks, if you haven't already, please do subscribe on iTunes or on Podbean. You can find the Frogs of War podcast pretty much wherever you can find podcasts. We are there and are available. It would help us out a tremendous amount if you would leave us a review, leave us some comments about how you think the show is going. If you think that it's total crap, if you think that I am taking the moral high ground with all of this Urban Meyer stuff, say so. I'll argue with you on the comments. It'll be great. We'll have so much fun. But seriously, leave us a review. Give us a rating on iTunes. That helps boost the profile of the show so more people can hear Melissa and I talk for 64 minutes plus every single Wednesday or Thursday, depending on schedule. This has been the Frogs of War podcast. Next week is TCU football game week number one of the 2018 season. We're pumped. You're pumped.
I just got chills.
I am Jamie Plunkett.
I'm Melissa Treeblosser. Go Frogs.